Günstig ohne App. Bei Aldi gibt es einen Preis für alle. Diese Woche Bio-Joghurt mit Crispy Müsli, 150 Gramm für nur 89 Cent. Oder Iglo-Rahmspinat, 750 Gramm für nur 1,69 Euro. Entdecke weitere Angebote in deinem Aldi Nord. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Welcome to Mysterious Universe, Season 28, Episode 1. Coming up on this show, we've got Encountering the Entities of the Tube, Psychic Migraines, and the Hunt for India's Deadliest Man-Eater. I'm Benjamin Grundy. Joining me is Aaron Wright.
Welcome back to an all-new season. Have we got one crazy show for you coming up today?
Yeah, I'm excited about my stuff too. I know you've been sitting on the migranoid encounters.
Yeah, the migranoid realm. This is a really weird way of approaching essentially what is, it's in the name, migraines and the weird experiences that people have. And I know that at the beginning of, I think it was season 22 of Plus, we briefly touched on some experiences that people have with migraines, headaches, you know, other associated neurological phenomena and how they see weird stuff. This just blows that all out of the water.
Yeah, you were scheduled to talk about this on the last Plus show to open our new Plus season on Tuesday, but I kind of hijacked the show talking about a guy who got a tiny metaphysical penis inserted into his head. That shoots green lasers.
I might
and that
have
went
some
for like
insight.
2 hours, that yeah, show.
It did. I might have some insight to that as well, because not the little penis, but the shooting of beams from people's heads is witnessed in this sort of phenomenon.
His shamanic master placed a tiny, and it was erect too, but it was only like a few centimeters big, placed it inside his mind in another dimension.
And he shot people with it.
If you're listening to this and you're not a Plus member,
yeah, you're missing out.
How do you even sit there?
Yeah, how do you even function?
Live with yourself.
How do you not know that there's a world of psychic penises out there? You are missing so much.
I've got a great story for this show coming up in Plus.
Yeah, what have you got coming up?
I've got Avni Inside the Hunt for India's Deadliest Man-Eater. This is by Nawab Shafaf Khan. And for nearly 3 years in the rural area of India, there was this tiger. It was codenamed T1 by the authorities that were tracking it, which
like a Terminator.
It wasn't a Terminator reference. It terrorized this area of over 150 square kilometers, and it led to more than 20,000 villagers locking themselves in their homes. Crops were decimated because people were too scared to go and take care of them. People were, you know, locking themselves up for fear of being killed and eaten. And this hunt was eventually a sensation in the press in India. It led to the killing of this tiger. And the press, as you expect the press to
do, sensationalized things, of course.
Completely sensationalized it. The men that risked their lives to stop this man-eater were completely vilified and slandered by the press. They were slandered on social media.
Let me guess, from environmentalists?
Well, they had their lives destroyed. Yeah, activists, conservation extremists. And if you search for the hashtag justice for Tigris Avni, it was trending in late 2018, you just get all these tweets. Like one here from Mr. Rakshit said, Avni's post-mortem report is out. She was not a man-eater. She was killed in cold blood by a telescopic rifle. And then hashtag justice for Arni from Mukul Sharma. She was a beautiful, innocent mother. I feel ashamed of my country. Here, people are selfish, heartless, as well as mindless. They killed an innocent tiger, symbolizing the end of humanity. The tiger, our national animal. And there's a cute picture of two tiger cubs. And they're saying, we want justice for our mum. Hashtag justice for Avni.
Oh, it's all a bit much. But I imagine that the reality is that this was a people killer.
My favorite was hashtag we roar for Avni. Killing is not the solution. Hashtag let Avni live. And it's just got a bunch of obese Indians holding up the sign.
So dicks out for Avni just didn't really catch on.
Dicks out for Avni was trending as well. And this was all, like, you can imagine all the sad lion or sad tiger pictures, the sad cubs missing their mother.
They're beautiful creatures.
What? None of the tweets mention in any detail at all is that this tiger killed 14 people.
Yeah. And not just killed, it actually stalked them.
Ripped their heads off.
Yeah, violent and vicious.
It created dozens of orphans left behind because, you know, their mothers and fathers were ripped apart.
In defense, though, of people that are, you know, inclined that way, is it possible that it could be like human encroachment upon their habitat or they're competing for their farming land was encroaching upon them?
Well, the author of this book, Nawab Shafath Khan, is the guy that hunted the tiger.
Oh.
So he's finally telling his side of the story. And it's unbelievable. It's amazing. Like this tiger, let me give you one example because this is coming up in Plus. This tiger, that one case where it killed a guy, it had killed three of the guy's herd of cattle, like three of his cows, and decided to eat him and leave the cows.
What? So it had a taste for human flesh.
The tiger...
But not to sensationalise.
It didn't. In some instances, it preferred eating human beings.
Is that potentially because we're easier to bring down?
Just like the taste.
Wow.
It's just like the taste. And there's multiple cases. And he makes this case where once you have a tiger that loses its fear of human beings and it becomes comfortable with us and also it becomes accustomed to our mannerisms and it learns to hunt us, basically.
Oh, they're smart. Yeah, they're very smart.
They're very, very smart. It learns to hunt us. And this particular tiger learnt to evade capture. Remember, it was stalking people for nearly 5 years and it became very, very effective at avoiding traps, you know, staying undetected, disappearing. It's almost like it knew when they were going to step up operations to capture it. And it would just vanish from the area and pop up somewhere else like 70 kilometers
it's
away.
It's that cunning.
It knew exactly what they were doing. They never got it to enter a trap. Like other tigers, they would put bait in there and the tiger would enter the trap and get captured. This tiger never once took any bait ever in the entire time they were trying to capture it. And the hunter, Nawab Khan, he makes the case that once you have an animal like this, it just needs to be taken out. Like it just needs to be taken out of the equation. Because what happens is the people that are being hunted, the villagers, for example, they start taking matters into their own hands. They start poisoning water sources. They start trying to kill tigers who aren't man-eaters.
Yeah, you don't want to kill them.
And so this guy's whole argument is when you've got an animal like this that has a taste for human blood and human flesh, it has to be removed from the equation immediately to protect the rest of the tigers, the rest of the wildlife.
Yep.
And he makes a great case. And it's a fascinating story. There's also some tales of him hunting like killer elephants as well and how tigers are like, their numbers are out of control in India at the moment, along with elephants.
Are you serious? I thought they're endangered.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're technically endangered, but their numbers double every year almost at this point. And there's so many of them, they can't fit in India's forests anymore.
Yeah, right.
So it's really, really eye-opening. And for him to tell his story after he was labelled a tiger murderer.
Well, look, it's very easy to tweet something from your, you know, three-bedroom home when you're very comfortable and safe as opposed to a mud hut where you've got a tiger stalking you outside. Yeah, very different circumstances.
And it's the same old arguments. It's like, well, just shoot him in the paw.
Oh.
just shoot him in the shoulder.
Yeah, no.
Why do you have to kill?
Doesn't quite work that way. All right, well, I'm looking forward to getting to that later on in the Plus extension of the show, but let's start off with diving into the migraineoid realm, the realm of migraines. And it appears that migraines are a gateway for some people to access another layer of reality. And, you know, migraines themselves are things that are quite, they tend to be ignored until recently by the scientific community. I mean, people have these incidences regularly. Most of the time it's written off as, well, you have a headache, like you have a severe headache. That's something that's going on. But a migraine isn't necessarily that. A migraine is a set of neurological experiences that people have that are wide and varied. Yes, they're commonly associated with pain, but there's a whole wide range of other things that aren't even paranormal yet. You just wait till I get into the paranormal stuff.
Wait, so can you have a migraine that's not painful?
Absolutely.
Really?
You can have a migraine where you can just experience a flashing of lights in your eyes. You might temporarily, it's not that you go blind, but your vision is impeded. Your vision might go blurry for a moment. You may feel nauseous. You may have a strange tingling that seems to move throughout your body. And then, of course, you can have the severe pain, which is normally an indicator for people having migraines.
Serious follow-up question. Mm. Are the migranoids 3-foot-tall goblin creatures that live in the migranoid dimension? Are they actual little dudes?
No, but there are actually little dudes that do show up.
Oh, really?
In some of these stories. And this is what, you know, you find when you start looking into the stories of migraines. And in fact, you know, the reason why I got onto this entire topic, because I'm like, migraines, like everyone knows what a migraine is, even though, you know, a lot of us haven't experienced them. There's the light phenomena, the scintillations, the stochomas that people experience, where you go, oh, this is something which is very unsettling, very difficult for me to deal with. And when people see weird stuff, they don't report that element of it because they don't want to be seen as being psychotic or suffering from hallucinations. But the reason why I got into this is because when we did that show in the previous season where I was talking about the secondary ego, you know, there was that hypothesis, this idea that there's this secondary hidden ego that can't come to the surface inside each and every one of us. But for some people, when they've suffered some type of psychic attack or, you know, a kundalini explosion or anything like that, like if you start crossing into this stuff, you find that there are some people that have a spontaneous personality that will appear and will take over their body and will essentially drive and will go and get them to do things. And where this crosses over is that some people experience this during a migraine. They actually black out. They will start getting this weird zigzagging effect in their vision. They'll know that this migraine is coming on. 3% of the population only see this scintillating effect that's happening in their vision. They know they're having a migraine. But some of them will black out and they wake up in weird places. Now, what does this sound like, right? Some people, there's reports of people experiencing regularly migraines, but for some of them, they experience them on regular intervals. Like it's actually almost down to the same time, for example, every week. Like every Tuesday at 3 p.m., they'll have a migraine, but they'll black out.
Is that body rhythm? That can't be body rhythms over a weekly period.
No one really knows. There's research that's been done into it, but no one really knows. Obviously, there's a whole range of different scientific, you know, explanations that have been put forward that it's some type of a form of epilepsy. There are some people that experience some type of benign tumor that has to be removed. And once the tumor is removed, then all of a sudden they return to normal. But there's a very small subset of people that have been looked at from a paranormal research perspective where they will black out and they find themselves either in a field naked, and they don't know how they've gotten there, or they'll find themselves in another room with their clothing on backwards.
Really?
Or they'll find themselves like up in their attic.
Strapped to a metal table about not to be experimented on.
Well, that's the thing. I could not find any reference to people having regression hypnosis after having these experiences because it's such a small subset. Like it's a very, very tiny subset. But when you start digging into the stories, and you wouldn't believe what I had to do. I had to go to a German journal to go and find this stuff, like reports of people. There was like a German journal called The Realm of the Migraine or something like that.
Run it through Google Translate.
I had to go through Google Translate to go and find some of it. And they're only very small anecdotes. Like they're extremely small anecdotes. But it does tie in with other people in the ufological research field that have gone, this sounds like alien abductions. It sounds exactly like alien abductions, especially this physical element of it where people don't know where they are. And people, it's odd as well, right? Where are the family members? Where are the people that you live with? And they don't see anything. They don't see people leave their bedroom. They don't see them go and move. And yet they turn up in odd locations.
Yeah, very strange.
And they have no recollection of how they got there, except they have a splitting headache afterwards. But each and every one of those cases, they have this flashing of lights that occurs. Now, some people have even described, and it has been diagnosed as being like a form of epilepsy. And there does appear to be a scientific link between migraines and epilepsy. Like that has been found. But there appears to be people describing, and this goes back to your penis story, Ben, not necessarily penis.
Not my penis story.
Not your penis story. The story that you covered of, you know, describing this psychic penis sprouting from people's heads and shooting at laser beams, is that some people, when they'll see the scintillating effect, it's like there's an escalation. So they start having migraines, and as these migraines start to become more common, they have a more regular attack. Some people will describe a beam shooting down through the ceiling and hitting them in the face before they pass out.
Really?
So I'm like, what is happening here? What is?
And so migraines in general, I'm going to assume, is something, as you said, everyone knows about what a migraine is, but I'm presuming it's not well understood by science.
It's not well understood. And it tends to be a little bit of a paradox in a way as well, because as I was saying, you know, many people know what a headache is. Like everyone knows what a headache is, but the actual form of a migraine itself, most people are very reluctant to talk about the visual effects that they get. And so it's only recently where people start describing more of this, you know, the weirdness that's associated with these things, is it starting to show up in medical journals, scientific literature, you know, and people starting to go, oh, hang on a second, I'm having these experiences. Like the number of reports that I was reading of people that would have this, again, it's not even paranormal. It's just a very disturbing experience they get where all of a sudden they feel like they can see the flashing lights. They see objects dematerializing before them and they'll go and tell a family member. And it turns out that that family member has a history of migraines. Mm. So it seems to follow down, again, like UFO abductions, it follows down a family line.
So I presume you've got some cases for us.
Yeah, absolutely. So one person that looked closely at this back in 1998 was John Harney. Now, John Harney started to recognize the links between migraine auras and UFO encounters. And you can see this similarity. You see the lights that are flashing. You have the blackouts that are occurring. And unfortunately, he was shot down very, very quickly. There were numerous and notable ufological researchers globally across the field that just shot him down.
Because, I guess because they're worried that UFO abductions will be labeled as just migraines.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah, correct. That they would go down this path of it being just a simple neurological phenomenon when that doesn't appear to be the case. And look, this is really important for me to say as well. Don't think that I'm saying that every single experience that people, you know, experience something weird or see something weird is just simply a migraine. And that's okay. There could be a whole range of different reasons why this is happening. And what I agree with John Harney, I mean, everything he's written here I agree with, is that this is one possibility. There could be a subset of cases of people having these experiences that are quite vivid, that are hallucinations, that simply are coming from within. But where I go a little bit further with this is that I think, well, maybe it is just simply a biological experience that someone's happening. It's all contained within the mind, and it's all very natural, albeit misunderstood. It also could be that people are accessing other realms.
Yeah, I mean, to say it's all internal doesn't remove the idea of it being a real tangible experience. You know, just to say it's internal doesn't mean it's a hallucination that has no basis in reality.
Look, there's numerous people, especially when you look at Hinduism, for example. Buddhism has been, this has been touched on, obviously in very obscure ways, but also people within the New Age community. You know, whenever you look into Kundalini, it's referred to as a Kundalini accident, and it doesn't mean that you have, like, you know, something spraying out of your pants. It's essentially that some people that have Kundalini, right, it causes, and this is where there's nothing scientific about this at all. It's just, you know, the arguments that's been put out there. Apparently when you have Kundalini and it raises up through you. Now, what people describe in having some migraines is they find that they get a sensation that will occur somewhere in their body and it will move through their body, which is what's described in Kundalini.
Yeah, the energy
rising
moving
of the Kundalini. Now, what happens is as that gets higher, if you're not ready for it, it collides with your crown chakra. And it overloads your crown chakra.
Uh-oh.
So there was this woman that was describing that she had this exact feeling. She had like this burning in her pants. It started moving up through her body. She'd been obviously messing with, you know, meditation and these practices, trying to activate her Kundalini.
Oh, God.
But she just wasn't ready. So this heat passed up through her body. It went up through her spine. It collided with her crown chakra. And because she wasn't ready, she said that she experienced her brain being expanded 3 inches beyond her skull. She described it as feeling that the brain itself, the actual physical brain, started expanding like a sponge, filling with something, and it had this tight band around it, and it started kind of going over the edge of this band, God, which was the crown chakra, right?
Yeah.
And as it all expanded, she said, because she thought that she had this, you know, massive piece of tissue that was hanging outside her head.
That's why you've got to trepan your skull before you do any Kundalini stuff. You've got to make sure there's a hole there.
Now,
it's
of
like
course,
tapping a hole in an egg before you boil it.
She didn't seek the assistance of a doctor. She went to a holistic healer, and the holistic healer is the one that diagnosed this as being a Kundalini accident that had collided with her crown chakra.
Whoops.
But as silly as it is, right, what she's actually describing has been reported in scientific studies into migraines. People describe their bodies expanding. You know, Grossinger, for example. So when, you know, I get into his book, Migraine Auras When the Visual World Fails, it's Richard Grossinger. He describes that, you know, he first had migraines when he was 48 years old. So he'd had a lifetime of, you know, nothing to be concerned about, no experience, no reference for it.
Really?
And all of a sudden, at 48 years old, he has this incredible experience. Now, the way that it started for him is that he was just following his normal daily routine. He got up out of bed, he wandered downstairs, he had a cup of coffee poured for him, and he was reading the newspaper. And as he's reading the newspaper, he said that he realized that he couldn't read it. He's like, oh, this is kind of odd. And he's like looking, he's like, maybe the light's wrong. So he moves it in the light and that doesn't change it. And he's thinking, well, maybe it's badly printed because it was kind of, you know, phasing in and out. And he claims that the characters became hieroglyphic. Like they actually became this weird hieroglyphic form that he could see. So transforming before his eyes, you know, obviously the hallucination of the migraine. And then he said the letters and the words actually began to completely disappear. Like they just disappeared before him. So it wasn't even like you've got that full scintillation, which may have been taking effect. There was an actual disturbance in his reality and it was changing. And obviously this was so concerning for him, this visual, you know, field disturbance. There was those zigzagging lines. And, you know, it kind of comes back to, there's a classical Greek word for it, which is ultimately dizziness, but it's far more than dizziness. But that being his first experience got him intrigued to look into this and to try to understand more of the elements of what the migraine is and how more unusual it could be. Well, many years later, he had this experience. Now, there is some indication, this is what's so weird about this and makes it so complex, that migraine phenomena may be open to suggestion. So you may be able to suggest to a person the type of experience that they're going to have, right, while having migraines. And I found this to be particularly unusual. But before I get into that, he'd been doing all this research into migraines, and he described one evening lying in bed. And as he was lying in bed, he realized that his body parts were starting to expand and contract. So it wasn't even that he was seeing lights. It was just suddenly his body, one side was heavier or denser than the other. And he felt that his consciousness. And normally our consciousness, we know, is up in our face, right? It's in our heads. Like Normally your consciousness is there. The only way he would describe it is he could move his consciousness to any point in his body.
That's fascinating.
He could move it anywhere. And so the idea of like, we can all go, yes, you know, our consciousness can be anywhere. But no. Like the actual, like visualizing the world and knowing you're you can be in your leg.
There's an old Chinese term for this, which translates as heart thinking.
Oh,
you're thinking
right.
with your heart instead of your brain.
Right.
Which people have thought of as being someone being compassionate, but no, it literally means
thinking with that organ.
Thoughts form is in the heart, not in the brain. And The idea is that that's if your consciousness is some kind of tangible thing with a boundary that normally sits inside your skull. I mean, we know our brain is a processor of thoughts, but the origin of thoughts comes from outside the brain.
Yes.
If it comes from some other thing, that thing can actually move around the body. And for most of us, it stays in the skull forever. But from what he's describing, and there's other reports of this, there's people that report thinking with their calf or thinking with their thigh.
Oh, yeah, it sounds to be exactly the same. And what he then found was obviously quite, you know, disconcerting for him, is that his body started to fold up like an accordion. Like it started to compress and roll up towards him like this weird accordion kind of
did
effect.
It go, like an accordion?
No, well, it's funny that you should say that because I did, when I was reading it, I was like, yeah, that's, I'm imagining it's exactly what happened to him. But no, that's not what happened. But I was wondering with this, I'm like, well, he's been doing all this research. Like he was reading Migraine by Oliver Sacks. Like Oliver Sacks has done some really fantastic research into migraine. But that's where I started going into this idea of suggestibility, because when I read Migraine by Oliver Sacks, it also put me on the path of a whole range of different studies that have been done into otoscopy, right? And otoscopy is the doppelganger effect. And I thought, okay, this is particularly interesting because with some people, basically they had this escalation of the phenomenon where not only do they start having this weird lights that they're seeing and the zigzagging in their vision, some people start to see some really unusual things. So let me give you an example. Sometimes people can see things like kaleidoscope transformations that are happening in their vision, like an actual kaleidoscope effect. It's more than just a scintillating that you see. Some people have like these bubbles that rise up out of the ground and start heading towards you. One guy that frequently got migraines, no matter where he was, it didn't matter, wherever he was and his migraine struck, he would get a warning. So he would get kind of like a flash in a certain part of his eye and he'd be, or in the field of his vision, and he knew that he was having a migraine. He never got the pain, but wherever he was, a manhole would appear. And from this manhole, the manhole would open and a guy in like a hard hat and coveralls with an American flag on it would climb out of the manhole.
What?
And be like, good day, and then just walk off. no matter where he was. Where so this migraine
he could
struck.
Be in a swimming pool and anywhere, a manhole would appear.
Anywhere. And this was found to be, it was determined that he was suffering from migraines. But this is something that was referred to as the migraineoid realm.
This Why is, that hallucination, though? This is the
that
thing.
That specific hallucination.
Why
as well.
That?
It's odd, right? And this is the other thing. Like, some people have tried to argue that this is some type of effect of the, essentially, it's like people are asleep, but they're awake. It's like some crossover of the hypnagogic effect where something has gone wrong in the neurological processes and people are very awake, but the effect of sleep is somehow kicking in. So they're actually dreaming while they're having the experience. I'm like, okay, well, I'm willing to accept that. But if you're doing that, how often do you have a repeating dream?
Exactly. Like that explanation, that explanation suggests chaos.
Exactly.
Chaos in the mind. Yeah. A repeating function, a repeating image suggests the opposite of that.
Exactly.
It suggests that something is organized.
And why does such a wide variety of people from different walks of life describe the same set of symptoms have these hallucinations?
Do other people see the manhole guy?
No, not the manhole guy, but some of the crazy stories. There are people that say that they can see like the landscape becomes embroidered. It's like everything has been turned into an embroidery. One woman describes being chased by essentially orbs and triangles, like pyramids will appear and literally come towards her and she has to run away from them. One woman describes seeing small white skunks with erect tails running across her field of vision. Like white
actual skunks.
Actual skunks. Like a trail of them with erect tails that would run across her field of vision every time that she had a migraine. Like it was every time. Why?
She's
Why?
Probably possessed by 1,000 skunks.
That's a possibility as well. So, and another guy though, this is really creepy. There was a guy that regularly encountered a figure that was clad in white that would sit at this long table with his back to him. Like every single time that he tried to interact with him and he would never interact with him. And ultimately the phenomenon actually became more bizarre is that the figure started to disappear and it was just geometric figures that he could see flying around. So normally it's the opposite. It will go a little bit stranger. But many people describe seeing, like they feel, they sense a presence beside them, right? And this is where otoscopy seems to come in. This is where the doppelganger effect comes through. And this is what I was talking about, suggestion. There was one guy that was under the care of neurologists and these neurologists were particularly interested in the world of migraines. So they had a large study that was being conducted. And they got this guy in. He was one of many people that were underneath their study. And oddly enough, they made the mistake of suggesting to him because he had been coming in, he'd been having migraines, he'd been seeing weird geometric figures and other weird lights. And they said to him, have you ever experienced a doppelganger? And he's like, oh, no, that's never happened. 2 weeks later when he returns, he's like, right after you suggested that to me, I had a massive migraine when I left. When I was on the street, I saw me standing on the street just staring back at me.
Is that suggestibility though?
That's what I don't know. Like that's the question. And that's what was highlighted by the researchers was that this appears to be a suggestibility. But I'm like, is it? Or is it that just it somehow opened his mind up to another realm of what's occurring and people having these experiences? I really don't know. It's difficult to pin. Like if it's difficult for us, just imagine how in medical science is trying to understand what's occurring.
Is the entrance to that manhole cover the entrance to the multiverse?
Well, maybe. And that's precisely what some people have suggested more from a, an Eastern philosophy and meditation perspective, is that where this migraine is occurring is in the location of your third eye. So your third eye is being opened during these experiences. Now you have to question, is the migraine occurring because of the opening of the third eye?
Yes.
Or is it's, the...
It kills.
Or is it the migraine causing, the pain is causing the third eye to open? And that's something that, you know, it's this chicken and the egg kind of scenario with things that are happening. But, you know, what seems to happen with this stuff, and it lines up with the idea of, you know, pain and certain neurological states seemingly propelling people out of their bodies, right? This is what Robert Munro had spoken about with his out-of-body research. You know, you find that there's certain states that people can get into which involuntarily push them out of their body. Some people pursue it through hypnagogic experiences, and I'm going to get into that a little bit in a moment. But there are other people, and again, a migraine essentially, in a way, it is an illness. Like, it's an illness. It's something which can be extremely debilitating.
Of course, yeah.
It's something that is, can make you very sick. And being in that state is enough to possibly weaken you or throw you out of your body or push you through this realm. There was one great example of a guy suffering from a migraine, and this is how this all came about, because he's having this migraine And it's like, oh, I can't. Like, he couldn't lie down and he couldn't focus. He's like, I know it will work. I'm going to write a letter to my family. So he goes and he writes this long form letter to his family. Now he goes and he has a nap and he wakes up. Now he goes and reads the letter. And when he reads the letter, it's completely different to what he wrote. It's just some other.
Someone else wrote it.
Someone else wrote the letter. And it was him. Like, he wrote the letter.
He's like, I hate you.
No, but something else stepped in when he was in this state and he blanked, right? He remembers starting to write the letter and then that's it. He blanked. So that's where this idea of the secondary ego coming in. So you can start to see where there's like, okay, people are having experiences that might be granting them access to another realm, and not just another realm, but the entities that dwell within it. And that's not necessarily a good thing. But before we get into that, let's look at it from a more scientific kind of perspective. And I do want to go into Migraine by Oliver Sacks. And you know, very early on in the book, he references something which I thought to be quite fascinating. He says, look, all the medical and religious literature, you know, contain innumerable references to the idea of a migraine, except they're linked with the idea of visions. Okay, that's fine. Trances, that's fine. And transports. And I thought,
transports?
Transports? What's going on here? And it turns out that even in modern medical literature, there has been an understanding of otoscopy, doppelgangers, and he otoscopy. And he otoscopy is one of the most bizarre things I've ever uncovered in neurological phenomena.
What, teleporting or something?
So, okay, so let me show you. With he otoscopy, and I've got to pull up this article here. I pulled up this journal article from the Behavioral and Brain Functions.
Is this in German?
No, this one was in English, fortunately. This one was okay to pull up. But this one essentially was talking about a woman who had battled her doppelganger. Like, she had actually battled her doppelganger. So this poor woman, right? This article, I'm not going to go into it in too great a detail because obviously it's very scientific and there's a whole heap of words in there, but it highlights the different forms of otoscopic phenomena that appear. And essentially it's this feeling of a presence. Like, it's really what ultimately it comes down to. But for a lot of people, the feeling of that presence is yourself. It's like, people, when they have a migraine, will all of a sudden say that there's a man in the room, there's a figure in the room. Some people did describe there being like a large blue blinking eye that was hovering over their shoulder. And yet there's swamis that have described the idea of the blue eye.
But that's third eye stuff.
Yeah, that's third
eye
stuff.
It's like when your third eye opens, that people say that you can see it looking at you. Yep. Sometimes people will see a giant eye staring at them.
Yeah.
It's their third eye.
But the thing is, for some people, they experience a doppelganger. Like, it's a version of themselves. Some people say that for the most part, it's very flimsy. It kind of appears as this colorless, foggy or pale thing. That's the words that are used to describe. There's sometimes a veil. But when people start to become disturbed by this is when their migraine doppelganger behaves autonomously, right? And it starts running around people's homes and doing their own thing and then leaving the home. This is where it gets even more extreme. And that's where you get veridical experiences that start popping up with that. And obviously that's not included in this study because this is a scientific study. So it's not going into that kind of stuff. But there was research that was put forward by David Leiter, and he describes the Vartika, which does link in obviously with doppelganger phenomena. But essentially what happened to this woman, and there are other similar reports, is that when she started having these experiences, they would only last seconds. Sometimes they would last a few minutes. But in other examples, they become a steady companion where this thing was hanging around quite a lot. And the problem for her, and this is reported in a lot of cases as well, of people that have long-term doppelgangers as a result of neurological issues. So it's not just migraines. It's also epilepsy. It's also tumors. You know, it's all this big kind of, you know, basket of neurological phenomena. But it all comes back kind of to the same thing. Is that this thing that was hanging around started acting in this autonomous fashion, but she couldn't determine whether or not, like, where her consciousness was. So going back to what we were describing with Richard Grossinger about his consciousness moving around, there's a subset of people that suffer from these doppelgangers, that their consciousness flips back and forward from themselves to their doppelganger. And it goes back and forth, and they don't know who they are anymore. That they literally, there's one story I was reading of a young man, right? This young man was found at the bottom of a garden bed, right? At the front of this two or three story building. And he was taken to the emergency room, obviously, and he was admitted to the hospital, and he woke up in the hospital bed. And his doctors are saying, how did you get here? What happened to you? Like, the guy was, you know, half naked and severely injured. He'd fallen out of his window. But had he actually fallen out? And as they got their psychiatrist in, they started, you know, grilling him more and more and more. He started describing this ongoing problem that he had where he was suffering from migraines. And the migraines became so bad that he one day woke up and he got up out of bed and he turned around to find himself still sleeping in the bed, right? And so he's like, it sounds like an out-of-body experience.
Yeah. Right?
That's what it sounds like. But he said that when he saw this guy in the bed, he's like, hey, get up, get up. He starts yelling at himself. And as he's yelling at himself and telling him to get up, he starts wailing into the guy. He starts punching him because he thinks there's an intruder, even though he knows it's him, right? There's almost this kind of detachment which is occurring. And he's wailing into this guy. As he's wailing in, he kind of comes to find himself, a man that looks like him, standing over him while he's lying in the bed, wailing into him.
What the hell is going on?
His consciousness jumped from when he got out of his body to his body still lying in the bed.
So was anyone in his body when the body that was in the bed being beaten up?
No.
Was it actually animated by anything?
No, it was nothing. It's just lying there. And he's beating up, but his consciousness moved from that and it gets even worse. He's like, well, how did this guy end up out his window? He's so freaked out by what's happening and his consciousness starts jumping back between the two. He's like, oh my God, I've been split between two. How am I ever going to get back? In this state, and look, you can't blame him. He thinks the only way that I can solve this is to jump out the window and hope that my body's merged.
Oh, wow. So it's not like, using this term, his consciousness is switching between the two. I think it's simpler to say his consciousness just keeps popping out of his body. It's not anchored like it normally would be.
No, but it's...
Because when you say switching, there's no switching. He's always his conscious self.
I should say his perception switches.
Right.
So his perception...
So he's in-body, he's out-of-body. He's in-body, he's out-of-body. But it's not like there's two people.
No,
two
but there's
people.
Two forms. There is two
well,
forms.
Well, of course there's two forms. When you leave your
I
body,
guess so, yeah.
You're out-of-body, you're you, and your body is a physical shell. But there's not two consciousnesses.
That absolutely, no, there's not two consciousnesses. That's exactly right.
But you're the case you're talking about with this woman who's fighting herself, that suggests there is two consciousnesses.
Yes, and that's where, well, this is what happens, right? And it has this Tulpic feel about it because in none of these cases have these people, obviously from the literature at least, have acknowledged that they were trying to create a Tulpa-like form. Like they weren't communicating with something, they weren't putting their energy into something. It seems like they are suffering from a genuine neurological condition, whatever that is, we don't know. But there's one of the symptoms being migraines. But ultimately, what happens with some of these people is not only do they have the doppelganger phenomenon take place, as I said a little bit earlier, it becomes autonomous. It starts doing things. And this is where the vardiga, which is the Norwegian term for like the arrival, the pre-arrival, starts happening, where other people, and this is what's important, the story of the guy jumping out the window, there was no veridical, you know, there was no witness.
Yeah, right.
But in the vardiga experience, there's always a witness because it's always family members, friends, they're describing what's taking place.
So this woman, how did she fight herself? You
okay,
tell
so
us what happened.
Well, what happened was is that she realized that the doppelganger was actually appearing as an alter ego. And she herself was understanding that she was experiencing bilocation. Like she couldn't decide whether she was disembodied or not. And she said when this double appeared, first of all, it started just acting out what she was doing. Like it would just copy her perfectly. And in fact, there's another report that I was reading today of a famed horticulturalist. And he started having migraines. And after he had his migraines, he would walk out into his lush garden and would find himself, like he would lean down to pick up a flower. And he would find his double on the opposite, like mirror, like in a mirror kind of version, leaning down to do the same thing.
See, this still sounds like she's just popping out of her body, though. For example, if she's standing in the kitchen cooking an egg and she looks over and sees a version of herself cooking an egg, then she's just popped out of body. She looks over, she sees her physical body going through the motions.
Perfect. Okay, so listen to this. So she had a generalized seizure that happened when she was 26 years of age. She was suffering from, eventually when she was admitted, she was 40 by the time she was admitted, but she was suffering from extreme depression and obviously other neurological conditions and emotional disturbances. She had three seizures from the age of 26. So not a lot, you know, going up to 40, but enough to obviously cause some type of issue that was going on inside her body. But when this double kept on appearing, right, and just mirroring her actions, you're totally right. It's just all within her, right? However, then she started to say that she could access the thoughts, words, and actions of the doppelganger. And it was different to hers. It was independent. So, but her perspective would change. Like she would jump into it. Her perspective would jump into the doppelganger that she didn't have control over, but she could understand its thoughts.
Oh, that's interesting.
And what's
going
on? Does
she give an example?
And does she just
go? Is it like fighting each other to the death? Because that's what I bought into. When you said there was a story of woman fighting a doppelganger, I want like shirts being torn and nails being ripped across the face.
Well, there seemed to be some verification in a very odd way. So immediately they hooked her up to an MRI, right? And they scanned her brain. And they found that there was a very abnormal signal that was transversing through her skull, like through her mind. Through her brain, you know, it's looking at the brain. But they couldn't understand what it was. All they knew is something odd was occurring. It was behaving in a way that the brain waves shouldn't behave. So like, okay, this is weird. So they decided to use a video EEG to record the onset of a seizure, because like many people that have migraines that, you know, commonly have them, some people that have seizures have indicators beforehand. They're called prodromes, at least in migraines. And that is like a light, a flash, you know, a feeling of sickness, that kind of thing.
So they just set her up in the lab and had her hooked up.
They had her hooked up, right? And she had to give this indication that, you know, something was going on. Her double actually appeared and she could give gestures. She was giving hand gestures to indicate that there was something in the room. She was having the seizure, but they'd spoken to her before so that she could give hand gestures. And she explained through the hand gestures that the double was in the room. It was motionless. It was silence. It was quiet. But it was her in normal size. It had the same clothing, but its facial expression was just, there was nothing to it. There was nothing in the expression. But then they noticed that she had an impairment of consciousness. She suddenly became quiet. Her eyes became fixed. She stopped answering questions. And something very odd happened. They noticed that there was this widespread, slow brainwave activity that passed through her brain that signaled that the otoscopic image had actually, it had moved from her consciousness, essentially. It's like something, and it was recorded in the EEG. This weird brain activity was picked up while she was gone. So from a scientific perspective, they were enthralled. Like they were absolutely enthralled, because this just shouldn't happen. Right? It just shouldn't happen. But it was like they actually captured on the EEG her consciousness moving to the other body, which no one else could see.
I was going to suggest she just popped out of body.
Well, maybe she popped out of body. I mean, maybe that's what took place. But she then refused. Like, she got too freaked out and she refused to engage in any further kind of experiences. But ultimately, she attempted to commit suicide. To commit suicide because the disconcerting nature of basically the autonomy of this doppelganger became so overwhelming that she thought the only way out was to commit suicide.
Yeah, my God, it would be so creepy.
Oh, it'd be horrible.
Gosh.
Now, fortunately, she was saved from the suicide attempt, but there's no more further details on this because she didn't want to participate any further in this study. But at least there is some evidence that there is certainly, it still doesn't suggest, right, that there's something paranormal occurring here. This could just be one of those extreme quirks of neurology that we just simply don't understand yet. It's really cool. I mean, it's really horrible for the person experiencing it, but it's really cool. But what about the actual paranormal elements of this? Like, is it just simply neurological? And going back to what I said at the very start of the show is that, are people accessing a realm? Are they going somewhere else? And it appears that at least when it comes to the Vardigas, there may be something going on here because you've got witnesses. You have people that experience these things. One classical case that was actually reported by a man by the name of Wigan described, it was the earliest report of a doppelganger appearing, right? This doppelganger, though, became autonomous and eventually became so dangerous that, first of all, he was being witnessed by other people, but it was causing trouble for him. Like, and the guy tried to shoot himself to stop this double from appearing.
That'll do it. I'll probably do it.
After he attempted suicide, the double disappeared. It was almost like its sentience was threatened by this, so it left. So let's jump forward to, you know, the idea of Vardigas and doppelgangers. There's some outlying kind of crazy stories out there, like Percy Shelley, for example, who was the English poet. Percy Shelley was extreme, and again, this coming back to emotional distress. Percy Shelley was extremely distressed due to the death of children. It was horrible for him. And he saw himself, he saw his doppelganger hanging around. Now, apparently the reason why this grabbed the attention of other people is because he had a servant. And this servant had said that they had seen him wander past their door one morning in one direction. And then it happened again. Now, the servant was quite shocked because for him to go past twice, it meant that he had to have transversed. Apparently there was a walkway that was raised about 2 or 3 stories. So for him to come back that far.
Very unlikely that he could have done it, yeah.
She thought he'd jumped because, even though he's still alive, she thought he had jumped because it's like, how the hell could he have gotten up there? So she goes rushing out to find him. And he's like, no, I've been downstairs the entire time. Now, the irony of this is that, you know, the Germans believe that if you see a doppelganger, it's a forebearance of...
An omen of death.
An omen of death. Sorry, not a forebearance. Yeah, an omen of death, right? Forewarning. He goes to a lake or to a beach or something and he sees his doppelganger. The doppelganger points out to the body of water. He died by drowning in that body of water. Only
thanks,
later.
Doppelganger.
Yeah, yeah. So,
thanks for spoiling the surprise.
So there's something known as heautoscopic suicide. And this is very rare cases of where someone attempts to kill one's double because the double is trying to commit acts that are against the intentions of the experiencer, of the person, you know, having these experiences. So I have to go to David Leiter. And David Leiter, in the Journal of Scientific Exploration, published this great letter about his understanding of the Vardiger experience. And so the Vardiger experience, it's rarely reported, right, in migraines. But there does seem to be, in some cases, people that their migraine doppelganger experiences start manifesting as Vardiger experiences.
Again, define the difference Vardiger and
right.
doppelganger.
So the doppelganger is normally you only see it for the most part. Sometimes other people will see it, so you do have that validation. But essentially, it's something that's happening in real time for you, right? You'll be around, someone else will kind of see you. You're normally not seen in the same location, but... it's another you. Like, it's another you that seems to be acting out what you're doing, but also autonomous in some fashion. It's doing its own kind of thing. The Vardiger tends to usually be auditory, whereas the doppelganger tends to be visual.
Right, so the Vardiger classic example would be the wife hearing her husband come through the front door, put his keys in the bowl, yep. And then she goes to greet him and he's not there. And yep. Then 15 minutes later, he actually comes home.
Exactly. There's some, and this is what was highlighted by David. David describes this story of his own experience where it's known as a pre-arrival. It's where essentially he had been driving through traffic and he had joined the Society for Scientific Exploration in 1991 at the recommendation of actually of Ian Stevenson, who we know is the, you know, reincarnation researcher. But he said his actual personal experience occurred about a decade before he joined the SSE. And it just so happened that he's a very pragmatic, nuts and bolts kind of guy. He's an engineer, you know, didn't have any interest in these sorts of topics. But he was going very well at work. He wasn't stressed. He was driving home. And as he was driving home, this seems to be the factor, right? He's kind of like phasing out. And this is what happens with so many of these experiences. It's not just Vardiger or doppelganger experiences. There's a whole state of where people seem to go into a trance because they're calm and they're relaxed and weird things happen. So he's driving through traffic at the end of the 1970s. He said it may have even been, you know, 1980. He was living in the suburbs of Philadelphia in Pennsylvania. He'd just left work and he had to drive about 30 miles to get home. And he says it was springtime. The turnpike was quiet. He's comfortably driving, very relaxed. Now, when he gets home, he says his wife says something to him along the lines of, what are you doing here again? Or what are you doing coming in again? And he said, what are you talking about? And she's like, you came home like 10, 15 minutes earlier. You came home and you were acting really weird. And he's like, no, I promise you, I wasn't acting weird. I've just gotten home. And she was confused and obviously very agitated. And she says, she yells out for her son. She's like, did you hear your father come home? And he yells back. He's like, yeah, I heard him. He went upstairs. Now, he's obviously David is, you know, confused about what's going on and his wife is upset. So he gives it a couple of hours for her to calm down. And in the light of calmness, they go and talk about it. And she's like, I saw you. You looked completely normal. You were wearing the same clothing, except you had no expression on your face at all. You came in, you were very atypical because you didn't come and greet me. Like that you said before, Ben, you put your keys in the bowl and you walked upstairs carrying your briefcase.
But the no expression on the face is similar to what the woman in the MRI said.
Exactly. Yeah. There's like, it's like some weird trance zombie was what it was described as. And, you know, he's like, I find this very shocking because it's like I was preoccupied in deep thought about getting home. And this is the thing.
Yeah, right.
He was thinking about getting home. He was calm and relaxed in a trance-like state, possibly induced by the easy drive that it was like a tulpa. Like,
yeah,
he put energy into
psychic
it.
Psychic projection.
Psychic projection. It went. Now, for him, he's like, he couldn't put the word to it. He didn't know what this was. But he said several years following his first experience, like he hadn't really thought about it too much, he had a second encounter that took place. And this is where, obviously, he jumped into the realm of the Vardiga and started doing all this exceptional research. And it's really funny how this idea and this concept seemingly is associated with Norwegians, and there's another term for it in the Scots, and then you don't find it anywhere else, which is odd, like, because you would think it would be a phenomenon which is, and maybe it's only recognized as being a usual kind of thing. Like, I'm sure it's a global phenomenon because it's a human phenomenon. You know, I was even reading a quote today that, like, this stuff has been with us since human sentience. Like, it's always there, but it's just, you know, written in different, well, interpreted in different ways. But the Norwegians are kind of like, oh yeah, that happens all the time. It just happens all the time. One theory I was reading, the reason why it's reported more in Norway is due to magnetic fields. And I know that sounds really crazy, but the idea is that the temporal lobe can be affected by magnetic fields, and the temporal lobe may be involved in astral projections or projection of forms. So maybe if there's something going on with a certain magnetic field in that region of the world, and it is close to the North Pole, and obviously you have, you know, strange fields there or differing fields, maybe that's somehow naturally inducing people to have these experiences. And that's why it's just so readily accepted, because it goes back so far. Obviously, there's no scientific, you know, backing for that.
I thought it's because there's just snow there all the time. There's nothing interesting to look at, so they just zone out.
Maybe that's a possibility. But look, his second experience I found to be quite intriguing, because he said, look, this happened on a Wednesday. It was the 31st of August in 1988, so 8 or 9 years after his first occurrence. And the reason why, you know, he knows the date is because it was the date of a funeral, right? He was going to a funeral for his aunt.
Don't tell me he psychically sends this slack-jawed, idiot-looking double to the funeral.
No, but he claims basically that the following day on the Thursday, he goes into work, and he worked as an engineer, and he worked with a bunch of engineers. So obviously all very down-to-earth kind of, you know, pragmatically minded people. And this guy, his colleague, comes up to him and he's like, what the hell happened yesterday? Why were you walking around the car park in a monkey suit?
What?
And immediately I'm like, and I'm thinking, here, oh my God, this is great. No, it was a monkey suit is the term that he used for like a banker's like high-end suit.
Right.
It's a suit. Because I'm like, oh great, monkey suit. That would be fantastic. And obviously David's response to him is like, what the hell are you talking about? And his friend was like a little bit freaked out. And he's like, I saw you here yesterday. And David's like, oh my God, not again. Thinking back to his first Vardiga experience. So he takes his friend into a quiet office room and he says to him, look, I'm going to tell you about an experience that I've had. And at first he thought that his friend was a little bit freaked out, but his friend was just like, it started to believe him. He's like, okay, this is what happened. So in a nutshell, his friend describes that he had looked out, just spontaneously looked out the window because his office or where he was had a view of the car park. And he was talking to a colleague and he saw his friend, his colleague, you know, out in the car park. But he said, and this is what grabs people, is that there seems to be this element of, yeah, it's that person. Like, yes, it's Ben wandering around the car park, but you're doing things that are odd. Like, it's not just directly odd. Like, there's these subtle things which triggers people to go, this is weird. And he said the reason why it was odd is, first of all, is that he was walking in the wrong direction of the car park. Like, where he normally parks and where the entrance is, he was going in the opposite direction. So why would he do that? Two is that he had this vacant stare. Like, he was just this odd, vacant stare. And three was that he was wearing this suit. Like, it's like when you come into work, you never wear that. You always wear, like, black slacks and, you know, a shirt, a collared shirt, and that's it. Like, they don't wear ties.
It's his funeral getup.
That's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it, so he's like, well, hang on, why? Like, and he said, this is the colleague. He's like, I wanted to run out and laugh at you, like, give you just a ribbing because you're wearing this suit. And when I got down to the door, there was no one there. And he's like, I don't understand. And then he went and asked the secretary, and the secretary is like, no, he's taking the day off because he's at a funeral. And this is exactly what had happened. He'd driven to this funeral, but guess what? While once again, he was driving, and he's obviously upset, but he said the passing of his 80-something-year-old aunt, and she'd been incapacitated for a few years, so it was almost like a relief. So as he was driving, he wasn't distressed. He was just like, oh, do-do-do-do, you know, going to the funeral, and... But he was thinking about, oh my God, I have to go into work. I should go into work to go and check on something.
Oh, wow. There it is.
So his doppelganger somehow projected from him and became a Vardiga and wandered through because he was thinking about that location.
This guy needs to control his thoughts.
Well, it does come down to that in a way. Yeah, it is. But I mean, why would you think about controlling your thoughts in that
fashion? Well, it's interesting when you think about the yogis and their supposed supernormal powers, that was one of the supernormal powers, to be able to project your consciousness anywhere. There's all these stories of yogis and, you know, Qigong masters being able to essentially not teleport, but a version of themselves will be sent to someone somewhere to deliver a message.
Right.
And they'll be hundreds of miles away.
Yep.
But in the case of someone who's mastered the ability, of course, their projection has their full conscious faculties.
Yes.
Where this is someone who it just seems to be happening randomly. They have no control over it. So it kind of makes sense that the psychic projection just has a dull, blank look on their face, that they haven't been imbued with the same conscious virility of the original.
Yep.
But that's the idea of having this multiple projection of yourself, multiple copies of yourself, when you become, you know, a master of oneself.
Yeah.
It's that the copy is a sentient being, but it also...
It's not self-aware.
It can do its own actions. It is its own kind of entity, but it will always do what the original would do in that situation.
Yes.
It will always follow the same thinking. It will have the same motivations. It is essentially that original person, but at the same time, its own sentient being.
That's a very good point. You're right. It does have the same mannerisms. It does do the same things. Although in heortoscopy, what seems to be a little bit unusual about that, and this is where I think then you start crossing into the realm of spirit attachment, possession, that kind of stuff, is that people describe that it becomes, and this is usually the case, right? It becomes negative. Like it starts behaving in a malicious fashion. It's still like a copy of you, but it does things that are malicious that you normally wouldn't do, that you're probably capable of. I mean, we're all capable of maliciousness, but this thing, it just seems to always go to the dark side. You know, one great example was of a guy that it was suffering from migraines repeatedly. He finally started to overcome these migraines. I think he was using some herbal treatment or something, funnily enough. And as he was using this, his double stopped appearing, but the double itself, like he realized that what it would do is it would peel away from him. So when he would go through an experience, he'd never experienced it before, right? But as he's having these herbs, and these herbs, whatever they are, seem to be working, when he has this next migraine experience and this attack, essentially, this thing peels away, right? It's him.
Yeah.
But he catches a glimpse of it, right? And he realizes that it's been sitting on his back, like it sits on his back waiting. And he describes it as a gelatinous bat form. Like it's like a bat, but it's sickly and black. And
that's one of the old fashioned sayings about garlic and really strong herbs and like strong alcohol, for example, is that when you take it, the entities that are on your body, whether they're good or bad, they can't stand the smell.
Oh,
and I think that's where the whole idea of getting rid of vampires with garlic, they can't stand the smell. So they get off your body.
Interesting.
So the fact that he's taking herbs. This thing's like, ugh.
Yeah, and it peels off his body. And when it leaves, it transforms into a copy of him.
Oh.
So it wasn't him. It's like it had taken his essence, though, and had drained enough from him to be able to take his form. And unfortunately, there was no other details included. There was nothing else that I could pull out. One thing that I found as well, which was just so bizarre, right? And I only just got the crux of this. I was only able to find the abstract of it because it was from an 1884 French medical journal. It's always in French, right? But it describes the concept of heterosexual autoscopy. And I was like, what is this? Like, this isn't 2021. Like, what? Yeah. Like, there's not a whole wide range of weird words for the sexual spectrum. What is this? But it turns out there's like multiple different interpretations for what heterosexual autoscopy is. But the French have a very fascinating way to describe it. So there was this guy who was suffering from what's appeared to be seizures, eye-blinking it to migraines, but he would have these episodic incidences of neurological distress. And this was happening quite a lot until ultimately he started having like a shadow person, doppelganger,
right,
kind of effect taking place. And it was associated with sleep paralysis. And it would always be at the point as where he was going to sleep. He said he would see himself walk into his bedroom, come over, lay down on the bed. He would feel the impression upon the bed. He would roll towards the bed because, you know, it's the 1800s, like the mattresses were very loose, and he would roll towards it from the depression and he could see it, but he would be paralyzed. He'd be absolutely paralyzed. But this thing that was him would be like, oh, ho, ho, ho.
try to have sex with
him. Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding you. And we'd be all like, oh.
Wait, how is this heterosexual?
Well, exactly, right? And every time he was like, oh, no, I don't swing that way. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But it's like, no, thanks. You know, I don't want that.
Like, I find you incredibly attractive.
You are. We are sexy bitches, yeah. But no, it's just, it's not going to happen. Right. And this kept on occurring. And he kept on resisting. Like, he kept on resisting until finally, right? This thing came into his room, except this time it was all a little bit ooh la la, because it came in and he could see it and it was him. But he's like, oh my God, it's a woman. It was him as a woman. It wasn't his doppelganger and drag. It was like the whole bodily form had been feminized.
Was it a tranny ganger? Was it a tranny ganger?
No, it was, his form had been feminized. It was like, literally, if he had a sex change, it actually worked. It was like a female form.
Okay, so it was, a female version of him.
Yeah, it was a female version of him. It climbed into the bed with him and he was paralyzed. He rolled
over. It wasn't just a bit of lipstick and a bad wig.
No.
Some bolt-ons.
No, nothing like that. And it ended. I couldn't find the rest of it because I found it in a journal, which was $35. Like, this is worth $35. I'm going to pay $35 to get this.
You bought the journal?
No, it rejected every single credit card I had. It just wouldn't accept it. I was so disappointed.
I think we should open one of those GoFundMe accounts to buy this journal.
I wanted to find out whether or not he ended up having sex with his female. It's implied from the abstract.
Dude, there's no way he didn't have sex with her.
It was just a little bit, his baguette got creamed, should we say. So, but I don't know what that is. Right? When I hear stories like that, as wild and as outrageous and crazy as it sounds.
You know
I'm
what
like,
that is. That's like, a succubus. Yeah, that's an incubus.
That's exactly what I'm thinking. I'm like, dude, you kept on saying, but why did it start off as him? Like, why would it start off as him?
Maybe he was a real narcissist and it thought maybe. That this is the best strategy.
Yeah, maybe that's a possibility as well. But I thought, okay, that's an interesting way to describe it. But going back to, you know, the experience.
It would be like one of those gender-changing face apps.
Yeah. But in the late French in 1800s.
Yeah.
Like, it's just...
When I use those, I just look like my mum. Gross.
Oh, dear. So going back to the Vardigas, though, there's just a couple of cases that I want to mention to you before I just kind of finish up with... I want to go into the hypnagogic experiences, because this is where... With these migraine cases and with Vardigas and that kind of stuff, what's really important to point out is that I know you were saying there, Ben, about the idea of controlling your thoughts. And yes, but for some people, you know, myself included, you don't really think that this stuff is a possibility. You're not aware of it. This stuff went on.
Well, I mean, after he's projected to several locations, well, then that's when you start to realize.
Exactly. But what I'm saying is, for most people, this stuff is completely out of their control. Like, it's complete. And for some people, it's such a horrible experience that it really is a curse in a way for them to undergo this. But of course, there are people that pursue it. And in doing so, as you'd expect, if you've been listening to the show for a while, you know that it never ends well. Like, seeking this stuff out for recreational purposes, it's not good. Like, it doesn't go well for people. And I'll describe some of those experiences. In the spontaneous ones, like, there was a guy that essentially was reading on his bed. Like, he'd climbed into bed. This is where you start to get to the elements of hypnagogic. So what I mean by hypnagogic is that it's this space of where you're just about to drift off to sleep. You're very relaxed. You're lying in bed, you're about to go to sleep, but you're not quite asleep just yet. And this is where people experience things like that jerking movement. You know how you suddenly will have that jerk, or you have exploding head syndrome. All this kind of stuff happens in that hypnagogic space. And this guy was lying on his bed. He was about to drift off to sleep when he says the door opens. And when the door opens, a 6 to 7 inch pink man and an ox walk into his room. And they just come in and they seem to be completely oblivious to him. And he said, rather than being shocked, he's like, okay, this is kind of normal. This is just after he'd had a migraine as he'd started to go to sleep.
Wow.
And it had triggered access to things. He could see this thing. He said he sees the man lean down, pat the ox on the head, and then the ox leaves. And then the man wanders out afterwards. Like a really weird kind of thing to see. But then, you know, jumping back to doppelgangers, right, and Vardigas. Normally with doppelgangers and Vardigas, there's stuff that's happening in real time. Like, it's happening. People are, even from a veridical perspective, people are seeing it at the same time where you can go, well, look, I was here when this happened. Like, I was driving when this happened. And normally it only happens within hours or within a day or so. So you can always kind of know where you are. There's this story that was published in Edsel back in 1958, which relates to a man by the name of Erkson Gorky. Now, Erksen Gorky was visiting Norway for the first time. He was a china importer and glass importer. So he had gone to go and buy this china and all this glass and this merchandise. And he walks into the hotel. And when he walks into the hotel, the desk clerk was like, oh, welcome back. It's so good to see you again.
Uh-oh, he's already checked in.
And he's like, yeah. And he's like, and apparently for several moments of embarrassed confusion, the two men kind of just tactfully, you know, kind of part ways after the clerk apologizes. Like, oh, I'm really sorry. I've mistaken you for someone else. It's like, what do you mean? He's like, you were here a couple of months ago. Like, you were here last year. He's like, no, I've never been to Norway before. He's like, oh. He's like, oh, you must have a doppelganger hanging around, right? And so he leaves, but he'd gone to Norway on this very specific purpose. He'd made arrangements to meet a manufacturer. So the following day, he goes to see this manufacturer, this wholesale dealer by the name of Mr. Olsen. Now, when he goes to meet Mr. Olsen, Mr. Olsen is like, oh, it's a pleasure to see you again. It's so wonderful that you're back. And
you want to hope the doppelganger got the business deal.
Well, you got to wonder. And he's like, okay, what the hell's going on? How do you know me? He's like, you were here last year. You were here last year. He's like, I've never been to Norway before. I've never met you before. And funnily enough, because it was Norway, this Mr. Olsen was like, okay, sit down. Let me explain to you. He was like, yeah, it's the Vardiga. I see them all the time. Like, it was like he readily, because it was like a culturally accepted thing.
So what, did he have a conversation with this guy?
He had a full on conversation.
And he was just acting normally?
He acted normally.
Have that blank look on his face?
No, he told him all about his merchandise. He picked out items that he wanted to buy. The only thing is, I don't think he got the order. That's all that happened. And the guy shows up almost a year later at the same hotel, following through everything that he would have done in the time following.
See, again, this is why it's a supernormal ability, because it's a very useful one. If he can send yourself out some kind of copy of yourself.
Traveling around the world.
Business deals.
Yeah, just imagine the advantages that would have. So this is where I want to round off the end of the show. And, you know, I might touch on this a little bit more in the future because I'm particularly fascinated by this. But there is a small group of people. There's a small online group of people that pursue hypnagogic trances, right? And these are people that know about this whole experience, this realm that happens of where when you get into that space of almost being asleep, apparently it takes a lot of practice and a lot of focus and meditation. But when you get into that space of when you're about to fall asleep, you do something like some type of meditation or you have like a weird kind of something that's important to you. Like you kind of create this idea in your mind that you focus on something when you're right. And it keeps you in that state. And while you're in that state, you can utilize it to do things like access the Akashic Records, or you can have experiences. Actually, I forgot to mention, right, there was one guy that was having migraines. And this is something that was highlighted by both Oliver Sacks and Richard Grossinger, is that in Hindu traditions, the migraine is actually a very cathartic and therapeutic effect, right?
Why?
So some people that have this effect, they have a migraine and it's horrible, but afterwards they have, they vomit or they have a gushing of tears, they'll cry, have like an emotional kind of breakdown, but it's a release. Other people have nosebleeds. Mm. And again, we're coming back to the abduction scenarios, right? But after this, they also have an immense clarity. They describe being able to do, have thoughts that they weren't capable of having before. So if they were focusing on something, trying to recall something, trying to remember something.
Interesting.
It comes through in absolute clarity after the migraine. And some people also get peace of mind that comes from it. Other people that are meditating have like a breakthrough after the migraine. But there was one man, and I was talking to you about this, Ben, on the Plus Show, was that this guy, and I guess it happens, like as you get older, you like to reminisce, you like to go back to old places in your mind of, you know, things that happened in your life. Well, he always wanted to go back to places in his mind, but he couldn't remember them. He had trouble remembering points in his life. Whenever he had migraines, just after he had the migraine, he could enter into this space where he could go anywhere in the timeline of his life and interact with everything just as it was. Like he could pick up objects, he could experience things, he could talk to people.
It's some kind of virtual reality room that you boot up of a memory.
And everything that was said, everything that happened, he can recall it all perfectly.
And we were saying we would go back to the moments of cringe in our blunder years.
That's right. But you can't change anything. Yeah, you can relive it, but you can't change it. But what his wife said is that when he did this, he would just pace back and forth in the room in a trance, mumbling to someone.
Yeah, weird.
So it was like, it wasn't even like he was lying down, like he was actually entering into some space. But look, there's a whole range of stories that are out there. I'll link to a whole heap of things in the show notes. There's journal studies in there. Obviously, I'll link to Oliver Sacks' book. I'll link to Richard Grossinger's book. I'll link to some of the other articles that are pulled up, the John Harney stuff. There's some wild stuff where I couldn't really get the exact story, but people describing things like if they're having a migraine, that everything in their house would dissolve and melt and they could see it. And they would walk around and like the stuff, as they went to touch it, it would just melt and just disappear. You know, other people describe seeing portals that will open inside their house and things starting to come out through it.
What kind of thing?
As in like entities, but the details.
Migranoids.
Migranoids, but the details weren't included. you know, other people describe everything floating up, like everything in their house would float up. And then of course there's the occasional obscure abduction style experience where some type of gray style entity would come through. But let's go back to the hypnagogic effects. And there's only a couple of stories there. But I don't understand why they don't see it. Like, why do you not see that this is a bad thing? Back in the 1980s, as this stuff apparently was taking off, particularly in Australia, like there's some cases that have come out of Australia of where people describe trying to enter into this hypnagogic state and having, you know, odd experiences, trying to see weird things. And people would describe things like they stopped doing it because they would feel the density of their body change, you know, which is very kind of out of body style, but they'd feel the density of their body change and there would be entities that would come into the room and they would lose consciousness. And as they lost consciousness, they would start floating out of the body and the entity would grab them, would actually take them somewhere and they didn't know where they were. A very abduction style kind of, you know, effect. But other people describe something that was just very odd and it was reported in different cases from around the world, but it was the same MO, the same modus operandi by these things. They would try to have a hypnagogic experience. They would wake, well, they would come to like a lucidity in this experience and they would find that they were paralyzed. They would then find a tingling and churning sensation that would be traveling up through their body. It would climb is the word that was used. It would climb into their skull or into their head. And as it did, figures wearing dark robes, with hoods would appear in the room. Now, when they came in, they would be carrying some type of weird long tube.
What?
This tube would be inserted into the center of their skull they would pass out. Now, this is even more crazy, right? In that particular encounter, when the guy woke up in the morning, there was a puncture mark in the center of his forehead.
No.
Like he could actually see like a puncture mark that was there, like this heavy bruise kind of effect. There was another guy, right, that described that he was in this hypnagogic state. He almost was about to enter into this space when he was completely paralyzed and the door opened. When the door opened, this little goblin-style creature carrying what appeared to be a 1980s-style vacuum cleaner, like, you know, the old, like, Lux kind of things,
yeah,
long stupid style vacuum cleaner with a handle, came in, produced the handle of the vacuum cleaner, kind of, like, fiddled with it, to extend like this telescopic wand out of it. Guess what he did with the wand? He stuck the wand into his skull. And he said, he sucked thoughts out of my mind.
Oh my God.
As he was paralyzed. It's like, sucking this stuff out. There was another guy who in the late 1980s in Australia described, again, being in this hypnagogic. Now, I don't know if in this particular case he was trying to get into this state or if he'd had a long series of sleep paralysis experiences, but it was the hypnagogic state, right? He woke up, he came to paralyzed, he couldn't move. There was a tube, this like heavy metal tube that he could move to his hands, right? And he reached up to his face. This tube was lying across his face with the nozzle of it stuck into his skull. Again, and an entity standing at the end of the bed, just smiling. Passes out, blanks out. What are these things doing?
What is going on?
I know. What are these things doing?
Those hooded beings have been mentioned in so many cases that we've reported, whether it's abductions or out-of-body experiences. Remember, we just had one from the last show of the last season with Terry Lovelace.
Yes,
and Devil's Den, one of the reports that got sent to him, the last thing the eyewitness saw was one of these hooded entities coming out of the forest where this strange light was, then he lost consciousness and woke up in his trailer.
You gotta wonder if he ended up having a tube, you know, inserted into his skull.
He probably was tubed.
But why? This is the other thing, though. It's like, it's all something, while this all sounds, you know, it's very non-corporeal, it all sounds like very, like, physical, though. Like, they're using a tube. Like, why have they got this etheric tube that they could produce to shove it to people? Like, if you're gonna pull people's thoughts out of their heads, why don't you just do it?
Because things in other dimensions still need to use instruments. Just because it's in another dimension doesn't mean it's not a physical dimension.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really unusual. So
maybe Dyson makes a machine in that dimension.
It's like an evil
cyclone thought remover. Sucks it straight out.
But wouldn't it be because you obviously hear the sleep paralysis phenomena and that kind of stuff, and like, yeah, it's obviously all terrifying. But I don't know if it would be terrifying at first. Like, if you've never experienced it, and all of a sudden your door opens and a goblin with a vacuum cleaner comes in.
Yeah.
I think you're going to be more like intrigued and perplexed as opposed to terrified.
That's why you should always have hateful and racist thoughts all the time. Because when those goblin things come and suck thoughts out of you at night, they're just like, oh, what is this? And then they leave you alone. That's the secret.
Unless that's exactly what they want, though. That's the other problem. Like, this is the thing. Who knows what they want? It's so surreal. But again, like, these are people that are experiencing neurological issues. But that's ultimately the theme of this show. It's like, is it a neurological condition? Or is that what's causing this? Or is it a symptom of accessing another realm? Like, is that what it's about? And, you know, I'll leave it up to you to make that decision. And perhaps, you know, there will never be an answer for what this stuff is. But all of it will be linked in the show notes at mysteriousuniverse.org. And coming up after the break, Ben, we're going to be heading into man-eating tigers.
Man-eating tigers coming up. That was some awesome stuff on migraines. I want to have a migraine now.
No, you don't.
No,
you don't. Although I am particularly fascinated by the idea of, I always thought a migraine was that severe, debilitating, nauseous pain. But no, for, you know, some people, it's just the lights. It's just that scintillation and some really cool visions, and then that's it.
Yeah, but I guess usually it's the sign of other issues. It's not just an isolated thing.
Actually, I really should point out, right, if you've been suffering from similar experiences or having migraines or anything like that, don't panic right now and think you've got a neurological condition or a brain tumor, because that's obviously what a lot of people think. And for the most part, that's not the case.
It's not a tumor.
If you're worried, obviously go and get yourself checked out. If it's frequent and unusual, yes, go and get yourself checked out. But please don't panic and start thinking that you've got a tumor or anything like that, because that, at least in the research, seems to be not the case.
It's probably just one of those goblin dudes sticking a Dyson 1000 into your head and pulling out your horrible thoughts.
You'll be fine.
Nothing to worry about.
You'll be good.
Yeah. That's a wrap for our free show. Coming up after the break in Plus, we look at Avni, Inside the Hunt for India's Deadliest Man-Eater by Nawab Khan. And of course, Nawab Khan was the hunter, India's sharpshooter, that tracked this man-eater for years to try and put an end to this killing spree that terrorized tens of thousands of Indians in rural villages. And we're going to look at the claims made against him, how he was accused of being a horrible murderer of an innocent tiger, and get his side of the story as to actually what happened. Amazing stuff coming up. It's an incredible look, especially at the realities of life for people that are on the fringes of wilderness.
Yeah.
That is...
Yep.
Full of several creatures that can put an end to you pretty easily. And I've got a great story coming up with an encounter with a deadly elephant as well. Really amazing stuff coming up in Plus. Head to mysteriousuniverse.org/plus for all the details. Sign up today and you get instant access to these extensions we do on every single show on Friday. And of course, if you're a Plus member, you also get exclusive shows that come out every single Tuesday. And if you want to upgrade to our MU Max plan, you get access to every single show we've ever put out as well. Our entire back catalog is unlocked if you're on MU Max. All members also get an entirely ad-free version of the show. You get a higher quality MP3 that's exclusive to our Plus members as well, where you're getting a better sound quality on our membership. Again, check it out, mysteriousuniverse.org/plus. That's a wrap for this free edition of the show. Thanks for listening. Welcome back to a new season. If you're on Plus, stick around for great stuff after the break. For everyone else, we'll catch you next week. Extension, great to have you with us.